Welcome to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, he, him. I'm a queer political activist, actor, comedian, self-proclaimed sexy blurred. That's a black nerd. And each week, I'm joined in the corner by other fabulous minorities and some allies tackling the news, pop culture, politics, media, entertainment, and history with a little self-care, self-love sprinkled throughout, all for our own personal and collective empowerment. Well, hello, corner kids. It is our hodgepodge episode because, believe it or not, as long as some of our episodes can get sometimes, because when we get to talking, it's important stuff what we're talking about, but we can get going. And believe it or not, we have full blown on segments, corners, topics that you have never heard us discuss before on the show. Got cut for time. Yes, you've been missing out on full on segments. You all, I'm excited for you because you're in for a roller coaster of an episode. So hold on to your butts because first to kick it off, it's Ben Randall. He was here last week and we are going to jump into our TV and movie recommendations. And then we go back in time to when I had Desiree Rogers on the podcast and we go into a discussion on the heels of the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air reunion and Janet Hubbard was, you know, having her reconciliation with Will Smith and Monique could not let someone apologizing for some wrongdoing go by without her asking for her apology from Tyler Perry and Oprah Winfrey. So Desiree and I go in on that conversation and also we end it with the Queen of Minority Corner herself, with Aneke's cut for so many times corner. Like, this was cut when she tried to record it like 2 months ago, and then it was cut when she finally did record it. It is the dark, crazy bananas, twisted tale of just how Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer came to be. Yeah, it is a wild one. So this whole entire episode, it's like a Mr. Toad's wild ride of an episode. I think it's sort of like the Avengers of MK have assembled. But first, I do want to give you some brand spanking new news, some feel good news. I feel like every day when I am turning on the news, it's brighter. Remember the sun? It's coming back. She's back and she's shining bright. Super excited that Harriet Tubman coming on to the 20s. Remember that? Remember that thing 4 years ago? Yes, the Biden administration is moving full steam ahead with that. I can't wait to get paid in Tubmans. I'm going to request, can you pay me that in some Tubmans? Like, let's throw that around. Also, huge news, the revoking of the trans military ban. Biden has already signed that into action. What a colossal mistake that was. And not only are they doing that, but they're doing the work to get those who were kicked out of the military, who've been proudly serving this mess of a country and getting them reinstated. So I love it. The actual work that's being done. Also, have you seen how many, like, there's so many women of color who are working behind the scenes in the Biden administration. I am here for it. Simone Sanders, let's go. But I feel like, yes. So the Biden White House, it's aiming to advance racial equity with executive action. Just the fact that this word racial equity is being uttered out of the White House. This is phenomenal. I'm tickled pink. The four executive actions Biden signed, the first was directing the Department of Housing and Urban Development to take steps necessary to redress racial discriminatory federal housing policies. The second one, direct the Department of Justice to end its use of private prisons. Hello, let's go. Baby steps, let's move towards, and then have everybody read a copy of Angela Davis's Are Prisons Obsolete? That's me adding that. He hasn't gotten there yet, but we'll get him. The third one is reaffirm the federal government's commitment to tribal sovereignty and consultation. Remember, we've been talking about this for the past year. I feel like someone on the Biden team has been listening to Minority Corner, right? Am I hearing that? And then the last one, and to combat xenophobia against Asian American Pacific Islanders. Yes, all of the above. This is great. This is just, can you feel a brand new day? I do. I do. Trepidly, I do. Oh, and last thing before we jump into the hodgepodge stuff, I have to give this as a shout out in the very beginning of the show. Okay, this is just, I mean, the headline says it all. If y'all remember, we've done that episode about the Jungle Cruise when I did my reconnaissance, went to Disneyland, and saw that that ride was way too racist with their Ooga Booga characters. And big shout out, I've been talking about this at the end of the episodes lately, but our listener, Lucille, had done a change.org petition. They were like, oh, we should have a petition to, you know, get rid of the Jungle Cruise racistness of the Jungle Cruise ride. And I was like, go for it, make it, and we'll promote it on the show. And we've done that. And look at that, y'all. Look at that. We did it, MK at Minority Corner. We shut it down because Disney is finally updating the Jungle Cruise ride to be 100% less racist. Yes, I think they're getting rid of those Ooga Booga characters. The tribal people is going to be gone. Good timing. Like, this is a little bit delayed because here's the thing. That Jungle Cruise movie, if it wasn't for the Panda replay, the Panini pandemic, whatever you want to call it. If it wasn't for that, that Jungle Cruise movie would have been released this past summer and more people probably would have ridden that ride and seen and been subjected to this very xenophobic, dated, racist shit from the 1955. Woof. So, yes, y'all dodged a bullet on that one. Glad you're taking this time since no one's riding your ride to fix what need to be fixed. So there you go. Okay, there it is. So much good news in the very top. Let's get into, strap your seatbelts in because we are zipping all over the place from corner to corner, from back in time to front in time. Let's get into it. Your Minority Corner hodgepodge wild ride of an episode, kicking off with Ben Randall. Let's go. But before we talk about the burning plane that is our democracy, let's get into some other fun things. Before we get to that, let's start off with some good, good. What are you watching these days? Are you watching any like movies, TV? What is your interest or recommendations?
I am loving right now Pretend It's a City on Netflix with Fran Lebowitz. It is essentially, I think, a six-part, documentary series on Fran Lebowitz. Both, like, kind of, you learn a little bit about her background as a writer and, you know, her life. But then mostly it's her just going off on everything that annoys her. And in her, like, signature Fran Lebowitz wit that is just incredible.
And catch, like, I'm going to be a few things. I saw the trailer, and at first I was on the fence about it because I was like, I don't know, this just seems like some white lady complaining about stuff. But I also have heard the name Fran Lebowitz, and I know that she's important for some reason. Tell me, remind me why. I've heard the name. She's like a writer?
She's kind of like almost from another era. Almost like a Gore Vidal, like kind of just like a brilliant mind, just like telling you what's what and what they and what and their like hot take on every single little small thing.
Sort of like this podcast.
Yes, so that's exactly right.
This podcast is the Fran Lebowitz of its time.
Yes, but I have to admit, she's funnier than me certainly, and I dare not insult my
poppycock, if I can say. I feel like I'm getting into my Fran Lebowitz by saying poppycock.
So she just gets annoyed by everything, and so like, the title comes from she's at one of these like Q&As that she's been doing where she makes most of her money, where she just goes and speaks and people ask her questions and then the audience does and she's funny. And the film is made by Martin Scorsese, who is also on stage from a lot of these Q&As. And someone asked her, does it bother you when people stop in the middle of the sidewalk and like disrupt the flow of traffic? And she's like, of course it does. And she goes, I want to walk up to them and say, okay, first, pretend it's a city.
There you go. Yeah. First of all, first and foremost, who are these people that just like stop in the middle of it? But I can understand. And also the two, like, she's also seen New York change a lot.
Yeah.
I also though wonder, someone who gets so, it's a double-edged sword, I guess. Cause like some ways I'm like, maybe she shouldn't be living in the city cause she's just going to be annoyed like all the time. But she's seen like the evolution of it go in such like a direction that she probably is not too jazzed and excited about.
Absolutely. You know, for that apartment in that area at that time in 1971. And she's like, that was expensive though. Like, New York was cheaper. It was always expensive. Yes, it's hilarious.
Yeah, always rising with the times there. Fascinating. Okay, well, if it's got the Ben Randall stamp of approval, I will add it on to the queue. Tit for tat, I just got done watching One Night in Miami, as it's, you know, Martin Luther King weekend. He has nothing to do with the movie. He's not even referenced in it at all. But it's of the era, of the time. It's on Amazon. It is directed by Regina King, which she has been around since 227. Like, and she's been consistently working, which is so hard to do as a, like, young black actress, like a child star, and consistently work throughout, like, the decades. She was in Friday. She was in Poetic Justice. She was in this show. She was in The Watchmen most recently, right? Like, she just always, she was on If Bill Street Could Talk. Like, she just, and then, for her first, I was kind of like thinking, like, you know, the premise of the movie is based on a moment that did happen, but no one knows what really happened in this hotel room. So it was Malcolm X, Muhammad Ali, Sam Cooke, and NFL star Jim Brown all in a hotel room. And no one knows what was actually said. And so it's based on a play that also happened. But it's just sort of like all these amazing conversations between these four black men who were so important to civil rights and the black struggle and journey, and coming at it from different angles. And it was just like these conversations have happened. It's just as important today, seeing like what's happening, context of today. Such a powerful story. And then just the performances out of this fucking world. Because I was kind of like, okay, Malcolm X, like, you know, Denzel Washington already played that part. Like, who else has got a... This actor knocked it out of the park. Both can exist. I'm not even going to say, like, move over Denzel. I would say both of these parts can exist. If you ever seen the Muhammad Ali movie, which his story is also brilliant, but this actor, I will say, I think he maybe did take the cake from Will Smith, who did a great job, but I think he did an even more part. But their relationships, and here's the thing that Regina King does as a director, and because she's such a talented actor, she lets the actors tell the story. Some directors are very much on like camera tricks and we're panning here, She really just lets these actors, and it all pretty much just takes place in a hotel room, but it never feels stagnant. The movie just clips. And we're going to circle back to this in another episode, because my dad was raving about this, but the Sam Cooke documentary and just even his story, that also kind of, you know, you have these black musicians and the lane that they were sort of pushed into or forced into, and then how they used their platform to do the work that they ended up doing, and just their journey and struggle. I just, you know, some movies that are very like Oscar baity, and you're just like, oh, okay, you know, this was good. This was a phenomenal fucking movie.
Where did you watch it?
Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime. Okay.
Yeah.
Is it a rental or was it just, it's on there?
It's already on there. Amazing. Because I think, again, this was supposed to come out in theaters. The pandemic happened, and I think Amazon snatched it up. So if you got the Amazon Prime, give Jeff Bezos gonna get some coin, but it's for a good cause. Like, I just, it's been a long time since I've seen a movie that I'm like, this is like a phenomenal fucking movie. No notes.
Yeah, it's. I think it's supposed to be a big Oscar contender, definitely for her. I've heard that she has a good shot getting a Best Director nomination, which is incredible.
First time out of like, yeah, I just also too think that, like, I don't know, sometimes, like, you know, I will say this. I think people of color, particularly black people, I think our Oscar stories are just so much more interesting. We just have, like, I just, you know, sometimes it's just like, you know, The Irishman. Oh, it's hard being white in this time period. Okay, I'm sure. Okay. I just feel like we have so much more layered, and I think our stories need to be told. So that way some white people aren't going and storm the Capitol because they think that they have had, you know, all these struggles. So y'all go One Night in Miami. Get in there.
Can't wait. I need to see it. It was on my list anyway, so done.
Good. All right. Didn't have to sell you too much on that. No. You're like, don't, James, put the PowerPoint away. I'm already there. All right. What else have you got? What else can you give us?
Oh, my God. Well, speaking of white people, I have a new favorite show that is just kind of pure popcorn. It's called Dairy Girls.
I've heard of this.
It's on Netflix. It's fantastic. I admit I came to it because I also like The Great British Baking Show. Like, it's huge. Not even guilty pleasure, just pleasure of mine. Just
go. Don't guilt it. It is no just brings it. Me. You need joy and happiness in these day and age. You need to know what are those things that bring me. Replenish the tank so that way you can go out there and do the work. Your gas can't run on, you know, fumes.
And so there's a crossover episode of the Great British Baking Show for the holidays. They did, like, the cast of Dairy Girls is on. And I was a little bit like, I hate crossover episodes, especially, like, celebrity competition. It's just, like, really annoying. And I didn't know who these people were, but they were, like, kind of amusing and kind of funny, and it kind of surprised me. And I said, okay, fine, we'll watch it. And it's so good.
Oh.
It's so, so good. So it basically, the premise is these five North Ireland Catholic schoolgirls in the mid-90s. Meanwhile, of course, set against the backdrop of, like, the Irish Troubles and, like, the quest for independence. So, like, all around them is, like, their parents are very aware of the violence and the war going on, mm-hmm. but the girls are just getting into really stupid trouble every week.
Like, meanwhile, there's, like, an Irish bomb going off or something correct. In the background.
And they're getting into the most ridiculously dumb trouble every single week. And it's so funny. And it's, like, a laugh out loud funny. And each episode is, like, 22 minutes. So, like, and this roll right into that. So it's a perfect binge show because it just takes your mind off of everything. But it's also really, really well done. The writing's fantastic.
Oh, love it. All right. On the list. Okay. Last one that I wanted to plug. This is the talk of the town. I feel like your boyfriend made you watch this show. You had to have seen this. Did you see WandaVision, the first two episodes?
I was told I wouldn't like it.
So really? I was like, because your boyfriend is a Marvel fanatic. And so I was like thinking, I was like, I'm sure he made him watch it. And I actually think that you would like it. I actually think that you would. Because you've seen Marvel movies, right? You've seen some. Okay. All right. Ben, you are my highbrow political friend. So sometimes I'm just like,
you know what I'm appropriating comic books.
Ben Randall, I don't know who told you that, but I think that you would enjoy it because, like, it's very sort of, who did Mulholland Drive? Was that David Fincher?
Lynch.
David Lynch. Okay, so many Davids. Who are these avant-garde artistic, Lynch? You know. Yes, David Lynch. It's very sort of Mulholland Drive in some aspects, because it's like there's a weird, funky mystery, and sometimes there's just these weird things that are happening, but it's set in this, like, sitcom world, so the first episode's very, like, Dick Van Dyke, and then the next episode is very, like, Bewitched, and I think there's going to be one, like, it's going through, like, modern sort of, you know, sitcom eras, and they do it so pitch perfect. Like, it's very a hard sort of art form to do, and they actually do a really terrific job. Like, my body was vibrating because it was giving me joy. Like, it was, I was like, I remember this feeling. Like, it just was like, because there are no sitcoms with, like, the audience laugh track, and it just, it's so pitch perfectly done. I actually think that you would enjoy it for, like, Marvel's doing something so different and taking such, like, a risk and just going in such a different direction. And yet it's telling some sort of story and there's a mystery and we don't know what's going on. Even two episodes in, I'm like, I still don't know what's going on, but I like where this is going. I recommend.
Okay. I will check it out. I think give it a fair shake then. I will ignore my boyfriend, or maybe I will sit next to him and be like, okay, explain to me what I'm not understanding. And
yeah, because there are going to... Yeah, you might need to watch some YouTube videos of someone being like, here's the Easter eggs, or this is what this means. But yes, I'm sure your boyfriend can fill in the blanks. Did you see The Prom on Netflix?
I have not watched it. I saw it on Broadway, but I've not seen the movie version.
Oh, interesting. Have you seen it? I did. I saw it. I enjoyed it. I thought, I wish it had come out in theaters because of the, I mean, you know the plot. Like, it's such, I think, an important plot to, like, have showcased on. And I was, like, thinking, you know, as I have been, you know, out since I was, you know, 18 and out to, like, my family probably for over a decade. And so, and I have, you know, my gay friends, and I live in San Francisco. I lived in New York. And so it was just interesting because I'm like, you know, there's still people who need, there's still kids or just people in general who need to see these stories being told out of, like, the struggle of, like, it is still hard to be gay in some places. And even as an adult, there's still sometimes that self-hatingness can, you know, start, you know, creeping up. And it just, I thought it was just so great. My only thing is I wish it had, you know, been on, you know, the movie screen. There were some notes that, like, who is the guy who does late night, who is James Corden?
James Corden.
There were some people who were like, they were just giving him shit for like his performance. I do wish that a gay actor had played that role. I think he did a great job as a straight actor trying to play gay. And if anything, I think he was trying to hold himself back. And like, nah, I'm like, just punch it, honey. Like, I need you to be as gay as a picnic basket. Because
it's a very flamboyant character.
Yes.
It's very flamboyant.
And I think he would go there, but because he is a straight guy and not wanting to offend, he couldn't freely allow himself to fully go there because he is a conscious person who's trying to not play like a stereotype. But it's like, but that girl exists. She exists and she deserves to have representation on like the movie screen. So I think that would be, I don't know. It hasn't, I don't know. There's people who were giving it shit and I'm like, this movie is for, it's going to save lives. I think that there are kids who are going to see themselves or their parents are going to have conversations. I'm like, once again, Ryan Murphy is driving the conversation. Like Glee, I think helped like help with gay marriage being passed because it started to normalize like us and seeing us on primetime television. And so I thought once again, Ryan Murphy is doing the work.
It's funny you mentioned that because when I saw it on Broadway, that was my main takeaway. I had like mixed feelings about the show itself, but I really thought it was playing to the wrong crowd. I kind of thought, oh, I don't need this.
Right.
And it doesn't necessarily even feel edgy to a New York audience as it would have maybe in 2005.
Right.
It would have been very edgy, but now it feels like New York has moved on from this conversation a little bit, certainly. So it's funny you mentioned that because that's exactly what I thought when they were making a movie of it. I thought, well, that's good because actually that can now hit corners that really do need this story.
Storyblocks is dedicated to being the world's best royalty-free stock media subscription service with an ever-growing library of stock assets, including music, images, sound effects, and so much more. What's dope about Storyblocks is they have affordable subscription plans and tools, and with Storyblocks Unlimited All-Access Plan, you can get unlimited downloads of everything in the library. And what's really cool is that even if your subscription ends, everything you downloaded, it's yours to keep. Because, you know, sometimes you're on something and you're like, I think I'm done. And they snatch it. They snatch everything that you had. There goes the whole entire library. They're like a little golem taking it. They're your precious things that were yours. But nope, the story blocks, it is yours to keep. And here's something that's really cool, Corner Kids, I think you'll really like. In 2020, Storyblocks launched Restock, which is an initiative to increase diversity in their library. So Storyblocks is committing to having 20% of their footage with people contain Black, Indigenous, and people of color by 2022. So explore their library and subscribe today at storyblocks.com/minority. Once again, that is storyblocks.com/minority.
Well, hello, I'm Renee Colvert.
Hi, I'm Alexis Preston, and we are the hosts of Can I Pet Your Dog?
And we got breaking news, we got an expose, and all the beans have been spilled via an Apple Podcast review that said, this show isn't well-researched. Well, yeah, no duh. Of course it's not. Not since the day we started has it been well-researched. Guessing and anthropomorphizing dogs is what we do.
The Can I Pet Your Dog promise is that we will never do more than 10 seconds of research before telling you excitedly about any dog we see.
I'm going to come at you with top 10 enthusiasm, minimal facts.
We're here for a good time, not an educated time.
So if you love dogs and you don't love research, well, you know what? Come on in to Can I Pet Your Dog podcast every Tuesday on Maximum Fun Network.
Jump on board.
Oh yeah. Get on board. Speaking of people getting on board.
Okay.
Speaking of people getting on board. So recently, Will Smith and Janet Hubbard of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, they just had a reconciliation. It was very beautiful. And Monique, now every once in a while, she'll just pop back in and be like, hey, you know who else owes somebody an apology? Oprah, Tyler Perry, to me. And so she used this as an opportunity to remind everybody, she was like, hats off Will Smith for apologizing for what he did to Janet, about her career. Mm-hmm. Perhaps Tyler Perry, who has admitted in private that he was wrong, will follow suit and be man enough to apologize in the public like he promised. We'll work on Oprah Winfrey and Lionsgate a little later.
So what was Tyler, can you give me a little heads up? Like, so what was Tyler supposedly wrong about? Like, what did Tyler do wrong?
So this goes all the way back to 2010 Precious, right?
Yeah.
Like, she won an Oscar. Yes. And so you would think, like, here goes her career, that, like, she won the Oscar and it pretty much ended her career. And the scuttlebutt around the industry is that she just wasn't willing to play the game of Hollywood, where you have to go to, like, Lionsgate wanted her to go do all this press, and they wanted her to go to Cannes, and they wanted her to go to, like, you know, Paris and all to France. But they weren't necessarily, I think, like, she wasn't going to get paid for it, right? So she was, but they were going to, like, put her up in, like, a hotel. Like, she wasn't going to have to pay to, like, go there, but they weren't, she wasn't going to get paid to do it. And so her and her husband were, like, they've been labeled as difficult because they weren't willing to do those sort of things. She wasn't going to a lot of the Hollywood parties, yada. And so then she got pretty much labeled as difficult, you know, as difficult.
Okay, so I heard also that she wanted to be able to bring her entourage. Like, if she was going to do these, if she was going to be doing these press things, if she was going to be going out of the country, she wanted to make sure she could bring her hair, her makeup people, her stylist, all these people. And that's like, you know, bringing 5 to 10 people with her that she expected to get them to be paid to do that.
Right.
And they were like, and I think, I mean, I kind of, the little bit I've got from this is that she is, she feels of herself that she is a big star. And I mean, she owned her own comedy club. She's been working since she was, I don't know what, 17 years old. The woman is incredibly talented. Yeah. She's incredibly like capable, but she wasn't at a level of like, you know, a huge star where they will splash out that extra money for your, bring your entourage with you. And I think that that was also a thing, too. It's like, if you, I feel kind of, if you're not going to play the Hollywood game, which is, you know, go to these press junkets, do these things and follow suit how they would like you to do it so you can, you know, sort of publicize the movie, then you have to understand when people are looking to the future and they go, oh, you're not going to be willing to do that kind of stuff. So do we want you in this flick? You know, and that's, it's kind of, it's kind of like, you have the right to do whatever you need to satisfy yourself as an artist. You have the right to ask for what you want. And it's just a matter of you have to deal with kind of some of the consequences of it too.
I think that's like, that's really, and it's such a catch 22 because I do understand as, especially like as, you know, a black woman, you're going to want to bring your own people with you to do your hair and your makeup. How many times have I gotten to a set and they didn't have someone who, I always had to bring my own stuff with me just in case. So I totally do, it's sort of this catch, she again is on a journey and pathway that like her other white female counterparts in the industry don't have to deal with. And it's,
that's
sure there are other actresses who were maybe even the same level as her, or even a little bit less, who could have made those demands and they would have maybe bent over backwards forward to do it, you know? So there is that as well. It's just, it's unfortunate. Like, it's sad because I guess the other part of it where she's like, I guess who was it? Her and Tyler Perry had a conversation and Tyler Perry was like, man, if you just would have done all these things, you know, this wouldn't have happened. And he also was like, you know, I'm going to back pay you for, you know, what you should have made for the extra stuff for like Precious. And I guess she recorded that conversation.
Yeah. Supposedly it's supposed to be Tyler Perry.
Woo! What an interesting world. I mean, I'm recording this conversation, but you know that.
I'm going first. It's me, Jackie Cation.
Man, she's always this bossy. Hi. I'm Lori Kilmartin. We're a bunch of stand-up comics, and we've been doing comedy like 60 years total, both of us, but we look amazing.
Working out. We drop every Monday on Max Fun, and it's called The Jackie Lori Show, and you could listen to it and learn about comedy and learn about anger management and all the things.
And Jackie is married but childless, and I'm unmarried but child full. So together, we make one complete woman.
Is that just what that one's gonna end?
Yeah. And we try to make Kyle laugh just like that and say, oh my God, every episode.
It's a good job.
Jackie and Lori Show, Mondays, only on Maximum Fun.
I'm coming back with my hodgepodge, sort of dated corner.
Better late than never, but now is time.
You know, okay, so first of all, the first part of my hodgepodge corner is I was reading The Atlantic because I'm a cultured woman.
That's where some of my research came from my article was The Atlantic.
Ooh, okay, look, I love that. You know, you gotta have that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there was a story called The Story of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Don't subject your kids to Rudolph.
Oh, okay. I mean, it is a little
boring. By
Caitlin
Flanagan. Okay, but here's the thing. There is a couple of things, of points from this article that I wanted to bring up that I thought was really interesting. So Robert May was a copywriter at Montgomery Ward's. Do you remember Montgomery Ward's? That it's like this old timey department store.
Oh yeah, I remember Montgomery Ward's.
They don't exist anymore. We used to call them monkey wards, which I don't know if that's racist or weird. I don't know.
I
whatever.
Remember being a fever dream. I'm glad you brought this up. We were always like, oh, we're going to Montgomery Ward's today.
Yeah. Well, I think it was bought out by Sears. I remember that there was a Montgomery Ward's in Oakland.
That makes
and then
sense.
It turned into a Sears, and then it's completely gone now. Now it's like a tech building or whatever.
I mean, because there are no Sears either.
Well, is Sears still around or Sears gone?
I don't know. Okay. Someone, yeah, Sears, let us know. Whatever. Blink twice if you're here.
Anyways, so Robert May was a copywriter at Montgomery Ward's in Chicago, okay? And in 1939, he was asked by the store, for some reason, at Montgomery Ward's, to write a Christmas story. They're like, hey, can you write a Christmas story for this department store?
Wow.
So he... just to kind of give you his mindset while he was writing this story, mm-hmm. his wife had just died of cancer. So he was in a dark place.
Everything's starting to make sense. Because the story of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, I could sing it to you in 2 minutes. And they stretched that out to, like, what, a 60-minute movie?
Yeah. It's, well, no. Here's the interesting thing. So the song comes after the story. So he wrote this story and... And it's kind of like an homage to The Night Before Christmas. And then he was just like, you know, he was really wanted to give, and he's been quoted in saying this, a powerful evocation of loneliness.
Wow.
I know.
But you know what I also love is that there's always like, we've already got our bops. Like the holidays, like we already have our Christmas bops. We already have our Christmas stories. Like it's really hard to make like a new like Christmas classic. He was like the Mariah Carey of his time.
He is.
Like, you know, she's the only one to create a new Christmas bop in like the last like, you know, 20, 30, 40 years.
Robert May is creating those Christmas bops, sad ones, because in the story, Rudolph is rejected by all the reindeers and he weeps so much that he's in the middle of a puddle of tears. So much that the storybook that Montgomery Ward's released, they went as far as to stain some of the pages with his own teardrops.
Wow, they were going deep. I kind of like Montgomery Ward's. They're like this avant-garde artistic. They're like, let's go for it. What do you want?
Yeah, like, they're like, buy a suit for Christmas and be sad with this story.
Montgomery Ward's on sale. I see why they went out of business.
It's so crazy. Okay, so the book was a hit. People loved it. They were like, yes, it's 1939. It is sad times.
Oh,
we're about to enter into World War
II.
Okay. Things are bad. So we're into the
sad. It's the Depression. Like, we're in the Depression at that time.
Okay, so May bounces back. He's like, all right, I'm going to get remarried. So he gets remarried, falls in love, right? Then he's talking to his brother-in-law, this songwriter named Johnny Marks, and he's like, hey man, can you turn my story into a song? And then dude does, and it becomes the most popular Christmas song ever.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? That's the craziest thing.
I did not know that. Okay, so I just want to catch up, like, my brain. I for whatever reason, I was thinking that you were talking about the live, in the beginning, I thought you were talking about the live action Rudolph, but you're talking about the Genesis.
No, wait. Right, we're almost there.
Shit.
This is why this story is so bananas. So this is why I wanted to talk about it. So the songwriter, who's a brother-in-law to the guy who wrote it, right? So Robert May is the guy who wrote this sad story for Montgomery Wards. Then he gets remarried, and his brother-in-law, Johnny Marks, is the songwriter who writes the song, right? Johnny Marks lived next door to Rankin, the guy who made the frickin' stop animation
film. Just so incredibly connected.
Yeah. His neighbor was like, I really like this song. Can I make this into a holiday special to his neighbor? And he's like, yeah. Okay.
This is like if I was doodling and I like was like making a comic book. And I was like, I wish that this could become, you know, a book. And then I'm like sat next to, I don't know, Stephen King. Like he's like, oh, this looks really good.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Stephen King is also like neighbors to Kevin Feige. And Kevin Feige's like, let's make this into a movie. And then Kevin Feige has 100%. Ariana Grande at his house. And she's like, I'll sing the song. Yeah. Like.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Wow. Wild, wow. Right?
Right. Well, that's I also just want to say too. Slightly dated, but it's still, you know, it's still winter. It's still winter, and you know we still need that red nose to burn quite bright. don't pick on people; it's a tale as old as time. But I will say, like, what I think was so interesting too is that, like, if you ever rewatch the stop animation is like super a depressing movie too.
Yes.
So I'm not. It's and they go
Misfit
on this off
toys
this tangent
and like
because the song. Yeah, and the song is like really quick, so I mean they really were stretching it out of like we're gonna go be sad over in this land. I think someone drowns. Like it's a lot of stuff going on.
Hey, Puddle of Tears, you know it's they that kept that theme. There.
They were like they going back to its roots. So like Rudolph, like fanatics were like probably like, ooh, this stop animation. That they're like the song cut out too many things. The song didn't have the Puddle of Tears, and they're like, oh, this movie it stuck true to the roots.
100%. It's like their original goth. It's like full on dark. Like you think Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is all sunshine and, you know, candy canes, but it's dark. It's darkness. Mm-hmm. And I'm into it. I like it more than I know the darkness and how literally everybody involved with making it was connected somehow.
I love that. Oh, a family affair. All right. Well, there is the episode. A few more things before we go. We've got our rejuvenation station, our fact check, and our review of the week. But wasn't that fun? Wasn't that a fun episode? I feel like we deserved some fun. It's been quite a Mr. Toad's wild ride. So we had a corner wild ride, a minority corner's wild ride here today. So unfortunately, all the fun is always the first thing to go on the cutting room floor. When Sarah and I are putting together the episode, we're like, what do we cut? This really fun thing that, you know, we'll have to save for later. So hope y'all enjoyed it. It was so great to hear all those wonderful voices that make up Minority Corner. It's just really lovely, all the guest contributors that we have here on the show. But first, before we go any further, we need to pull into Choo Choo Rejuvenation Station. All aboard. So, you know, it's very important that we continue to take care of ourselves. And I'm going to provide the Rejuvenation Station for today, my Rejuvenation Station tip of the week. I have two things. I feel like that's cheating, but I have two things. The first one is... This doesn't sound like it's rejuvenating, but it really is. I take a very, like, I take a hot shower, and then the last minute to 2 minutes, I'm working my way up to 2 minutes, I turn the water on full cold. There is science behind this. A few things happen when you do this. One, it elevates the heart rate and gets that pumping. You know, if you've ever been to like a spa and they have like the hot baths and the cold baths, and it's actually incredibly rejuvenating. It does really good wonders for your skin. And also mentally, it's the toughest thing that I will have ever accomplished that day. It releases stress, similar to, you know, animals when they get chased by when a zebra survives a lion attack, it'll just shake all that nervous and stress energy, and we hold on to so much of that in our nervous body, in our nervous system. So it helps to shake that out. It's the tough, like, once I do that, I'm like, oh my God, I can do anything. I yell sometimes afterwards. I sometimes yell during, just to endure that. I'm like, okay, yes, I can do anything. I also have like the heat cranked up in the bathroom, so like afterwards, I'm just like taking care of myself, but get uncomfortable because that's how growth happens, and we have to, you know, build up that resiliency to uncomfortable situations and the uncomfortable things of life so that we're able to meet the day. It also helps with mood. It just give it a try, work your way up, maybe start with 30 seconds and then see if you can, you know, add on to that. It's the tail end of the shower. Take a hot shower and then switch it on over. I think the second thing that I would add on to that is just getting 8 hours of sleep. Sarah's like laughing at me because I've been struggling with this, but that is, I've noticed a difference of when I am actually getting those 8 hours of sleep. There's something that happens with your brain that you need that sleep because it filters out the things that aren't really important. So as they say, like, you know, oh, I'll sleep on it. It's a great idea. Sleep on it. Don't make decisions if you're not in the right frame of mind. And getting sleep, it's so key. There's so much that is going on. Really carve out and make that such a priority for yourself every week. So sleep and cold shower. See if you can do it and give it a try. All right, now let's move on over to fact check. Fact check. Fact check. What did you say? That's right. We believe in truth again. That's what's, you know, fake news is a thing of the past. So we're going to keep everything 100. So this, I just wanted to point out something I wasn't able to on the fly and have the actors' names from One Night in Miami. Highly recommend. So good. In fact, next week, we're going to be doing a deep dive in preparation for the Super Bowl. We're going to be doing a deep dive into Sam Cooke and NFL star Jim Brown, and just who are featured in One Night in Miami, and in preparation of the Super Bowl, I think that's happening or something. Anyways, the two actors that I wanted to highlight who played, one who played Malcolm X, Kingsley Ben-Adir, and then Eli Gorey, who played Cassius Clay. I may not be saying their names right. And then, of course, Aldis Hodge, who played Jim Brown, and Leslie Odom Jr., who played Sam Cooke. So we're going to learn all more about those two wonderful folks. It's like the football guy and the halftime show. See what we're doing here? Maybe I'm revealing my cards too soon. Okay, this fact check, it takes a village. It comes from one of our listeners, from Ivan, who let me know. Y'all know I've been struggling to pronounce the German parliament building that burnt down and led to Hitler essentially taking power. That thing that almost happened here, pretty much, which was our moment. I knew it started with an R, but thank you, Ivan, for letting me know who phonetically spelt it out for me. It's the Reichstag parliament building. The Reichstag. The Reichstag? Something like that. We're on a roll there. But awesome. I'll never forget the Rosh Hashanah Parliament building. Thank you. The Reichstag. There we go. Boom. Got it. Great. Let's get to our review of the week. Look, we've got time. We have time for the review of the week. This one comes from Andy G723, 5 stars. They wrote, the title is A Shining Light in These Troubled Times. They wrote, a very informative podcast that helps to contextualize the news right now. I've found myself very stressed, and listening to this podcast has helped me deal with that by providing actual information and direct actions we can take. A must listen to in any podcast library. Well, thank you for that. Like, these reviews just move me to tears, pieces. Just, it fills me up. I love it. You're picking up what we're putting down. I'm glad that it is able to provide that for you and for other folks out there as well. Because that's what we're trying to do here. So, and that's what was really fun to do this episode, because this one was just a lot of, we try to have fun, but we also have to be real about what's going on. And today was just a big old dose of fun. Going over towards the Twitter, Alvaro on Twitter at Identify As Happy wrote, yes, it's not about cancel culture, but accountability culture. 100% agreed. We're doing some rebranding. So if anybody's like, cancel culture, you're like, it's accountability culture. And I need you to be accountable as a human being participating in this culture together. Okay. not a call out. It is a call to action. Well, that is going to do it. You can get involved in the conversation on Twitter. We are at Minority Corner, spelled with a K. We're also over on Instagram. Definitely check out Instagram. We've got some Sam Jackson's just killing it over there on Instagram with all amazing kinds of posts and content and video. And be sure to check out our YouTube channel. If you're tired of just hearing us, you can then look at us and see us. Sarah Brown has been putting together our videos. We have videos of our episodes. They're coming out on the YouTube channel. So be sure to check that out. And there we go. That's the episode. I hope you had a great time. I hope you had fun. Let us know what you think about the episode on any of our social media channels. You can also email us, minoritycorner@gmail.com. You can ask us anything. We're due for a listener-themed Ask Minority Corner anything. You ask, we answer. Ask away. There we go. So thank you all so much for listening. So a big thanks to Sarah Brown, our editor, and to Sam Jackson, our social media manager, and a wonderful thank you to our guests and to all of you wonderful, amazing listeners, our corner kids, our Max Fund members, all of you, everybody. We love y'all so much. And thank you for listening to Minority Corner, because together we're the majority. Bye, y'all.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.